Wednesday will mark the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the landmark Supreme Court decision that guarantees a woman's right to an abortion. Political debate over the issue rages to this day and will almost certainly flare up in the 108th Congress. With Republican gains in the Senate and House last November and GOP control in both chambers, there are now more pro-life votes. And with a pro-life president, a number of measures to restrict abortions further could pass. NPR's Mara Liasson has more.
Historically, when the Supreme Court rules on a social issue, the matter is settled. 49 years after Brown v. Board of Education, there is no significant group of people in America suggesting a return to segregation. But that's not the case with Roe v. Wade. 30 years after Roe, the issue is still one of the most divisive and decisive in American politics. Kate Michaelman is the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, and she describes the current situation as dire.
Right now, on the anniversary, the 30th anniversary, a Congress convenes in Washington, where both houses now, Senate and House, are dominated by those who are committed to taking away a woman's right to choose. They have a partner in the White House who is also committed to having a government make abortion illegal. That is unprecedented since Roe v. Wade.
David Osteen is the head of the National Right to Life Committee. He's been fighting for the rights of the unborn about as long and with just as much passion as Michaelman has been fighting for the rights of women to choose. Osteen isn't willing to say the pro-life movement is on the verge of realizing its goal of reversing Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court, but he is optimistic about the prospect for pro-life legislation in Congress.
Are we closer today? Well, at one time, the vote was 5-4, and now it's probably would be 6-3. So in that sense, we're not. But there's, I think, increased opposition to abortion on demand. And you've got the party that takes a pro-life position in the majority in the House and in the Senate and in the White House. And that's very gratifying to see.
There's a group of bills before Congress that would restrict abortions, and several of them have the votes necessary to pass both houses. The situation in Congress reflects voters' views on the issue. Georgetown University political scientist Clyde Wilcox says Americans' attitudes about abortion have been remarkably static over the years. Although there's been some small growth in anti-abortion sentiment, a majority of Americans support restrictions on abortion, like parental notice or waiting periods, but Wilcox says there is still not a solid majority to make abortion illegal, even with exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother.
There are more pro-choice Americans than there are strict pro-life Americans thinking that abortion should never be allowed, but the pro-lifers are much more intense, more energetic. They care more about the issue because the current policy is further from their preferred point.
The pro-life activists are the insurgents in this battle, and they've kept the pro-choice forces on the defensive for years. David Osteen of National Right to Life says the anti-abortion movement played a large role in the midterm elections, where three new pro-life senators won in Minnesota, Missouri, and Georgia.
Among those people who vote on the basis of abortion, the majority will vote for pro-life candidates. That won't win every race, but in races that are otherwise even, the pro-life candidate will prevail.
There's no doubt that pro-life activists provide much of the grassroots muscle for the Republican Party, the same way that organized labor does for Democrats. But that doesn't mean stopping abortion has become a more urgent priority for Republicans once they're in office. David Garrow, a legal historian at Emory University, says there's a disconnect between the interest groups and the people they help elect.
Much of what we've seen for 5 or 6 years now is the interest groups on both sides of the abortion issue want to make abortion a front burner issue, but most political figures don't want abortion to be a top drawer issue. And that's what we've seen so far with the Bush administration. It wants to adopt policies that will please its right to life supporters, but only policies that are so marginal, so symbolic, so obscure that they don't make the front page of the newspapers.
Garrow believes that there is a political limit to what the pro-life movement can achieve. Laws restricting abortion may now be passed and signed, but Garrow says they won't achieve measures that pull the rug out from under Roe v. Wade entirely, such as the appointment of an explicitly anti-abortion Supreme Court nominee. Today, Republican presidents no longer talk about overturning Roe the way George Bush's father did when he addressed, by loudspeaker, the annual pro-life march on the Capitol.
I think the Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade was wrong and should be overturned. I promise you that the president hears you now and stands with you in a cause that must be won.
Now his son, also a pro-life president, sends a very different message. Here's how candidate George W. Bush described how hard he'd push to make abortion illegal.
I think what the next president ought to do is to promote a culture of life in America. Is the life of the elderly and life of those living all across the country, life of the unborn. As a matter of fact, I think a noble goal for this country is that every child born and unborn ought to be protected in law and welcomed into life. But I know we got to change a lot of minds before we get there in America.
The message is mixed but unmistakable. To the anti-abortion forces, it says, yes, I want to overturn Roe. To pro-choice voters and the many voters in the middle, it says, there's not much I'm going to do about it anytime soon. That nuanced message reflects the modern strategy of the Republican Party and the pro-life movement. Instead of focusing on a constitutional amendment banning abortions, they champion modest incremental measures the public supports. That strategy, to chip away at the right to abortion bit by bit, has been effective and, to NARAL's Kate Michaelman, frustrating.
Pro-choice Americans have become complacent. I know pro-choice Americans who are so convinced that this right can't be taken away, that the president really isn't going to really create the conditions for the rollback of a woman's right to choose, that they'll vote for candidates who are anti-choice.
Pro-choice voters are not always complacent. When they perceived an urgent threat to Roe v. Wade after the Supreme Court decisions in the early 90s, they mobilized and helped elect a Democratic Congress and a pro-choice president, Bill Clinton.
The constitutional right to choose is hanging by a thread. We are only one justice away from returning to the painful past before Roe v. Wade. Only a president committed to maintaining the present law can maintain constitutional right to choose.
And that's one of the biggest developments in the politics of abortion since Roe, says Georgetown's Clyde Wilcox. The pro-life movement and the pro-choice movement have each become thoroughly embedded in the base of the two parties.
Well, what's really changed is it's become a partisan debate. It means that we're debating it as a partisan issue. And so when Republicans are in a majority, then they are moving towards more restrictions. And when Democrats are in a majority, they're moving against those restrictions. It's become a litmus test for presidential candidates. You must be pro-choice if you're a Democrat. You must be pro-life if you're a Republican.
And 30 years after Roe, that stalemate appears to be a reliable feature of American politics. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
To learn more about the Roe v. Wade decision and the issue of abortion in America, go to our website, npr.org. You'll find pictures, archived stories, and more resources.